Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
What's the most terrifying thing a disturbing person ever did to you? Story 1. Recently, I moved out of my apartment because I no longer felt safe with my landlords. I had been living for a few months in a really nice apartment in the Dumbo area of Brooklyn with my roommate, who paid most of the rent since her parents were very wealthy. Our landlords seemed at first like a sweet couple living just a few floors above with their children. In the beginning, everything felt fairly normal except for the fact that whenever I ran into their kids in the elevator, they would suddenly scream at me before running away. At first, I thought it was silly and harmless, but then their oldest son, who was about my age, started doing the same thing. I didn't take it seriously and just assumed he was trying to play along with his younger siblings. Things started to feel strange when I bumped into the whole family one day and we began chatting. Out of nowhere, while we were having what seemed like a pleasant conversation, the father apologized to me for his son's behavior, saying that he might act unusual because he was not well. His blunt comment caught me off guard, and I remember just wanting to end the conversation immediately. A few days later, I ran into the father again in the elevator. He started complimenting the apartment and talking about how generous he was for giving us such a low rate, before suddenly asking me to babysit his kids while he, his wife, and his eldest son went to dinner. I initially refused, but then he offered me $150 an hour, and against my better judgment, I accepted. When I arrived at their place, I was shocked. The apartment wrapped around the entire floor of the building, the nicest one I had ever seen. For about an hour, everything seemed normal as I played video games with the kids. Then the front door suddenly slammed. I peeked out and saw the father stumbling in, clearly drunk. He collapsed face first onto the couch, and while I tried not to laugh, I went to check on him. He turned toward me and said something I couldn't quite process. And before I could react, his wife walked in, thanked me, paid me, and told me to come back another time. I left shaken and decided never to return. Later, I told my roommate, and she revealed that the father had once said something strange to her, too. My wife is cool, just so you know. From then on, we knew we were not going to renew the lease. During our final month, I had an awkward elevator ride with them and my boyfriend. As soon as they saw us, they went silent, just smiling and nodding, until the father suddenly winked at me as the doors closed. After that, I asked my boyfriend to stay with us until the lease ended, because my roommate and I were completely unsettled. The final and creepiest encounter happened just a few days before moving out. My roommate stepped out and found both landlords sitting outside the elevators waiting. When they saw her, they started crying and begged us to stay, claiming they thought we were the young girls they had been waiting for. She ignored them, got into the elevator, and called me to warn me. Moments later, they began knocking at our door. My boyfriend answered, and when the man saw him, he asked if I was home. My boyfriend said no, but they tried to come inside anyway. I came out and threatened to call the police if they didn't leave, at which point they begged me not to and ran out. A few days later, we received a message from an unknown number offering us 6 months of free rent if we would agree to a few nights with them. We blocked the number immediately. The entire experience was disturbing and deeply uncomfortable, especially knowing they always had keys to our apartment. Story 2. My unsettling new neighbor has a habit of watching me from his window at night. And the worst part is this isn't even the first disturbing experience I've had since living in this apartment. Ground floor units really are the worst. I live on the bottom floor in the back corner of an apartment building in a large city, and one of my bedroom windows faces a narrow ground-level dirt alleyway between my building and the one next door. A strange man recently moved into the building next to mine, and he constantly chain smokes, sometimes sitting in his window, other times climbing out and standing directly in the alley. The first time I noticed him, it was late at night when I was home alone. I saw a glowing ember floating in the darkness and realized someone was smoking in the pitch black. I quickly closed my shutters, but not before noticing that he was staring directly into my bedroom. I tried to shrug it off, telling myself he probably just caught sight of me moving around. Over the following months, however, my boyfriend and I noticed him repeatedly. From the angle of my bed, you can see him through the small cracks in the blinds. And no matter when we looked, he always seemed to be facing my window. This wasn't just a casual smoke here and there either. He would sit there, chain smoking for an hour at a time or come out multiple times throughout the night. It made me wonder if he was simply facing my direction or if he could actually see us inside. The most disturbing moment happened on Tuesday. After my boyfriend and I had spent some private time together, we lay on the bed only to notice him once again, sitting right on his windowsill, clearly visible through the blinds, staring at my window as if he hadn't moved all night. I desperately want to believe it's only a coincidence, but the truth is, he may have just seen far more than he should. Now I feel like I'll have to keep my windows covered forever. Story 3. This happened when I was about 8 years old, living in West Michigan, and even now at 23, I still get chills down my spine when I think about it. My family lived at the end of a cul-de-sac in a modest house surrounded by neighbors we trusted. My younger brother and I shared a basement bedroom with a large window that looked out over our backyard, and beyond that backyard was a major highway. You could always hear the hum of cars, but never loud enough to bother us at night. One summer evening, after spending the day playing with the neighbor kids, my brother and I had dinner, watched some of our favorite television shows, and then our mom tucked us into bed. As usual, we whispered and played quietly with our action figures, long after lights out. Always careful since our parents slept in the room right above ours. Eventually, sleepiness took over and we each climbed into bed. Normally, I'm a heavy sleeper, so it takes something unusual to wake me up. That night, in the middle of my sleep, I suddenly opened my eyes to find the room glowing with a strange bluish light. At first, I thought the lamp had been switched on, but after sitting up, I realized it was the full moon, shining through the clear sky straight into our window and casting a sharp beam across the floor. I tried to settle back down, but then I noticed something terrifying. In the middle of that beam was a shadow, slowly moving. It shifted until it formed the perfect outline of a man standing at our window. I froze completely. I couldn't move, couldn't scream, couldn't bring myself to actually look at the window to confirm what was there. To do that, I'd have to lean out, and I was too scared that whoever was out there would see me. After what felt like 10 minutes, though it was probably only a few seconds, the shadow moved back the way it came and disappeared. That's when I bolted upstairs, screaming for my parents. I told them there had been a person's shadow in my room. My dad grabbed a baseball bat and flashlight, went outside and circled the house, but he found nothing. My parents told me I'd probably just had a bad dream, though they let me stay in their bed for the rest of the night. The next morning, I told my brother, who was only 5 at the time, but he didn't really get it. Still, I wanted answers. I went outside to check for clues under our window. The ground was covered with wood chips from my dad's landscaping, so it was nearly impossible to tell if there had been footprints. I thought I saw a few faint imprints, but they could have been from anyone. For the next several nights, I struggled to sleep and sometimes needed one of my parents to sit beside me until I finally drifted off. Eventually, life went back to normal, and I tried to convince myself it was just my imagination. I even told the story to some neighborhood friends who laughed and teased me, except for one. My friend Matt, who lived in the house next to mine, looked pale when I finished. Then he told me that the very next night after my experience, during a storm, he saw the exact same kind of shadow cast across his floor when lightning lit up his room. We tried coming up with explanations. That maybe it was the local bully trying to scare us, or maybe some stranger wandering in from the nearby highway, but nothing ever came of it, and it never happened again. Still, I'll always wonder who was standing outside my bedroom window that night, and what might have happened if I had been brave enough to actually look. So to the stranger who stood there on that summer night, let's never meet. Story 4. I was home alone in my old apartment, which was on the ground floor in a not-so-great neighborhood, with my bedroom window facing a back alley. Just a short distance away sat a dumpster where homeless people often rummage. Right before dawn one morning, I woke to the sound of tapping on my window. My back was turned to it, but my eyes shot wide open. The room was dimly lit by my bedside lamp, and because the old vertical blinds were missing a slat, there was a gap of about 6 inches, meaning whoever was outside could see me lying in bed as clearly as if the window were uncovered. At first, it was only 5 or 6 taps, and I froze, trying desperately to convince myself it could be something other than a person, maybe an animal brushing against the glass. But then the tapping came again, more insistent this time, and I was hit with a horrifying realization that someone had been watching me through my window in the dark and decided to tap on the glass to let me know. My first thought was that maybe one of the homeless people had become aggressive while digging through the dumpster. But deep down, I knew this wasn't going to end well.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
I didn't dare turn to look, afraid of what might happen if I made eye contact. Instead, I slowly sat up, rubbing my eyes and pretending to be too groggy to notice, then casually walked out of the bedroom as if heading to the bathroom. The moment I was out of sight, I bolted for the phone, considering whether I should call the police or just run out my front door, even if it meant facing the street in nothing but a t-shirt and underwear. But before I could make a decision, I heard the sharp pop of the window being pried open. My heart nearly exploded from panic. At that exact moment, I heard my upstairs neighbor Mike coming down his stairs. I cracked open my front door and whispered urgently for his help. Mike was a big guy, rumored to be trained in martial arts, and without hesitation, he rushed around back. Within seconds, I heard a violent scuffle, thuds, grunts, someone being slammed into the wall and bushes. Moments later, Mike appeared at my door and told me not to worry, that the man wouldn't be bothering me again. I wanted to believe him, to think maybe it had just been someone desperate from the alley. But then Mike explained what he saw. After being beaten back, the intruder fled to the front of the building, jumped into a red sports car, and sped away. That detail chilled me. Our neighborhood was not the kind of place where red sports cars showed up casually. Later, the police told me it likely wasn't a homeless man at all, but someone who had noticed me somewhere in public, followed me home, and figured out where I lived. Ever since, I've wondered what that man planned to do if he'd managed to get inside before Mike caught him. Sometimes, I even wish Mike had ended it permanently that night. And sometimes, I worry he might still be out there, watching, waiting, having figured out where I live now. If that's the case, let's never meet. Story 5. When I was about 15 or 16, I had a terrifying encounter with a man knocking on my window at 3 o'clock in the morning. Back then, I didn't have blinds or curtains, and since I lived in a fairly rural area where we knew our neighbors well, I never thought about covering my windows. It was winter, and as usual, I was up late on my computer with the lights on in my room while it was pitch black outside. Suddenly, there were three loud bangs on my window. The sound startled me so badly that I fell off my bed and stayed on the floor, frozen. After a while, I convinced myself it must have been an animal, maybe a bat, that flew into the glass. I calmed down and went back to what I was doing. I didn't give it much thought afterward and didn't even mention it to anyone. But a few nights later, around the same time, I had my window cracked open, still uncovered, when I heard the sound of leaves crunching outside. The steps stopped directly beneath my window, though it was too dark to see who or what was there. My whole body froze as I felt an unmistakable presence staring at me, full of bad intentions. Too terrified to move, I sat there silently, locking my eyes on the darkness outside with the most intimidating look I could manage, as though daring them back. I held that stare for about 5 minutes until the footsteps finally retreated. Once I no longer heard them, I shut the window tight and covered it with a blanket. I barely slept that night. The following day, while at the store, I told my mom about hearing footsteps outside my window. She went pale immediately, which was unusual since she was one of the most fearless people I knew. She asked if I'd told my dad, and when I said no, she explained something that chilled me to my core. Earlier that morning, our neighbor had told my dad that she'd seen a man lurking in our yard for several nights. The night before, she had even seen him approach my window, then disappear into the darkness. She said he came back a few hours later as dawn approached, and that time she noticed he was holding a knife. She had screamed at him to leave, but instead of running down the street, he ran into our backyard and then into the woods. We lived in a military neighborhood, and normally that gave me a sense of security, but knowing that a man with a knife had been at my window more than once made me feel anything but safe. For the first time, my mom allowed me to stay at my boyfriend's house for a week until things calmed down. When I returned home, blinds and curtains had been installed, and the broken lock on the window had been fixed. I have never opened that window again. We reported the incident, but nothing ever came of it. I never saw the man, never knew what he looked like, but I hope we never meet. Story 6. Back in my junior year of high school about 2 years ago, I had a troubling experience with someone who became a stalker. Her name was Lucy, and we met by chance on the school bus when she sat next to me one afternoon. She fell asleep against me, and after that day, she began sitting with me almost every ride. At first, I didn't mind. She was quirky, cute, and fun to be around. But the more comfortable she got, the stranger she became. She would fall asleep on my chest, take pictures of me without asking, and made it clear that no one else was allowed to sit with me. Even after I ended things with her, she guarded that seat so fiercely that no one else would take it. It wasn't an official relationship, but breaking away from her felt like a messy breakup. She reacted by sitting a couple of rows behind me, watching me during the bus rides and following me part of the way home. I don't think she ever found out where I lived, but for the rest of high school, she never stopped watching me. After graduation, I thought I'd seen the last of her, but I was wrong. A few months later, I started working at Toys R Us. Before the release of the movie The Last Jedi, the store hosted a midnight event for new merchandise, and Lucy showed up, apparently a big fan. I asked my manager not to schedule me for that event, but she kept showing up anyway. Some of my coworkers said she gave them an odd vibe. She told one cashier that she was visiting an employee, which was unsettling because she meant me. For months, she would appear around the store, and even though I rarely saw her directly, people would warn me when she was there. After the holiday season, she stopped coming, and I thought maybe she had lost interest. But about 2 weeks ago, I saw her again. I was working in the back, then brought some items up front. On my way back, I noticed her standing in the electronics section, staring toward the back room where I had just been. She stood there for at least a minute or two before turning and leaving. She didn't try to talk to me, but it unsettled me deeply. She hasn't said a word to me in years, and yet she keeps reappearing. I don't know what she wants, and while part of me foolishly wants to ask her, another part of me knows it's dangerous. I'm left wondering if she's finished with me, or if she's just waiting. Story 7. It all began when I was 14, a shy and awkward high school student who made the mistake of asking a quiet classmate to our school's Sadie Hawkins dance. I barely knew him. We had a mutual friend and shared an interest in anime and manga. But I wanted to be kind, so I asked. That was mistake number one, He said yes, and soon after he sent me a long Facebook message confessing that he had always had a crush on me, calling me beautiful in exaggerated ways, and finally asking if I would be his girlfriend. Uncomfortable but too timid to say no, I agreed. Mistake number two. That same night he asked for my phone number, and I gave it to him. Mistake number three. From the beginning, our conversations felt heavier than I expected. He often shared feelings that were difficult for me to carry, and the calls became longer and more exhausting with time. What seemed simple at first gradually turned into something that no longer felt comfortable. By the evening of the gathering, the situation had reached a point where others naturally stepped in, and that was the moment I realized how unbalanced everything had become. Later, he texted me saying how magical the night was and how delicious the kiss had been, leaving me sick to my stomach. Still, I stayed in the relationship a little longer. Mistake number four. A few days later, he invited me to the movies and insisted I bring my best friend so his friend could try to date her. When I refused, his friend insulted me, and he, of course, broke down crying. At the theater, once the lights went out, he grabbed me and forced more unwanted kisses while his friend sat just a row behind us. Afterward, he texted me asking for photos, and when I refused, he threatened to hurt himself, claiming it would be my fault. Terrified, I gave in. The cycle repeated. Accusations of cheating, manipulative sobbing, demands for more pictures, then sudden switches back to pretending nothing happened. Within 2 weeks, I finally ended things. He cried, begged to stay friends, and told me he was transferring schools. I thought it was over. I was wrong. Every year until I turned 21, he sent me random messages like, "We're friends, right? I miss you," and even repeated requests for pictures. I ignored him and eventually blocked him everywhere. When I was in college, he resurfaced on Instagram. I blocked him instantly, but within minutes, he contacted me from another account, asking why I had blocked him. I finally snapped and warned him that if he ever contacted me again, I would file a restraining order and that it would damage his reputation and career. He responded by insulting me, then disappeared for good, or so I thought. Not long after, I received a message from another girl who had dated him. She told me he had used the exact same tactics on her: constant crying, manipulation, and threats of harming himself if she tried to leave. It was clear I hadn't been the only one, and I felt both sick and relieved to finally know I wasn't alone. Story 8. From the very beginning of the semester, I had constant problems with my dorm roommate. She never showered or washed her clothes regularly, left dry ramen noodles scattered all over the floor, never flushed the toilet or washed her hands, and even sighed constantly in a way that sounded disturbingly inappropriate. She would shower with the door wide open, splashing water everywhere, and over time it felt like every pet peeve I'd ever had was embodied in her. At first I brushed it off as a matter of her not understanding American etiquette since she was a foreign student. But then things started getting much stranger. When I told her I was leaving for the weekend, she sighed that same unsettling sigh, looking at me with sadness and even betrayal, asking why I was leaving her. She told me she didn't like sleeping in the room alone and that she felt more comfortable when I was there. This girl was practically a stranger to me, and I realized then that I should have kept my guard up. From that point on, her behavior grew more unnerving. Sometimes she would stare off into space for half an hour at a time, and other times I would catch her watching me study out of the corner of her eye. Once after I came back from the library, I found her sitting outside with her head on a table, eyes wide open, just staring into nothingness. I even suspect she scared off a guy I liked, because once he realized she was my roommate, he stopped coming around. She creeped me out so much that I started avoiding the dorm entirely, only coming back to sleep or grab my belongings. Eventually, I emailed my resident director asking for a room change because I simply couldn't live with her anymore. The very same day, I was in my room when I heard banging on the door. Two campus police officers and my resident director were standing there, asking where my roommate was. I told them I didn't know and mentioned her usual spots, but when I asked what was going on, they ignored me. A half hour later, my roommate returned in tears, rushing past me to her bed before collapsing, wailing and hyperventilating. At first, I thought maybe she had just received tragic news, but then I overheard pieces of her conversation with the staff. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I promise I won't do it again. That's when one of the officers quietly asked me if she had anything in the room she could use to harm herself. I pointed to her drawer where I had once seen a small knife, but he didn't find it. Suddenly she was behind him, screaming not to go through her things, insisting she wouldn't harm me and that she just wanted to be left alone. The resident director quickly pulled me aside and explained what had happened. She had been sending her best friend threatening emails and had also threatened to hurt herself. I was in shock. Later that night, after she calmed down, I went back to pack a bag and she apologized for acting crazy. I half-heartedly accepted, but I just wanted to leave. When I returned to grab a forgotten blanket, she was alone in the room and glared at me with pure hatred. "Where are you going?" she demanded, her voice sharper than I had ever heard it. I told her I was staying with a friend for the night, and she snapped, "Why? Because of me?" I tried to defuse the situation, forcing a cheerful tone, saying it was just a sleepover before our midterm. Luckily, she didn't push further, and I left quickly. Now, I've been told there are no available rooms left in my housing complex, and transferring to another would cost my parents an extra $1,000. They're furious, especially because the police officer jeopardized my safety by questioning me about potential weapons in front of her. I'm terrified to return to that dorm. The way she looked at me when I came back, like she was out for blood, still haunts me. And I don't know if it's safe to step foot in that room again. Story 9. When I was 21, I transferred to a college in San Francisco and started looking for a place to stay. I found a listing on Craigslist for a two-bedroom apartment in a great location, cheap rent, close to campus, and seemingly perfect. The woman already living there was named Beth. She was 29, tall, broad-shouldered, with jet black hair and pale makeup. She seemed quiet but nice enough, so I agreed to move in. My first night there, we went out for pizza, and that's when I started realizing something was off. Throughout dinner, she kept telling me how much I looked like the actor Shia LaBeouf. I didn't know how to respond, so I just awkwardly said thanks, though I really don't look like him at all. When we got home, she asked if I wanted to see her room. I said sure, and what I found shocked me. Every wall was covered with Shia LaBeouf posters, even printed photos taped around her mirror. She owned all his movies. After spending the evening hearing her say, "I looked like him," it became obvious she was completely obsessed. At first, I didn't see her much. She would rush to her room after work and spend hours in there, sometimes giggling in a high-pitched, unsettling way, well into the night. Occasionally, she'd stumble into the hallway, slurring her words like she had been drinking heavily, and just stand there watching me in silence. When I greeted her, she'd let out that same creepy giggle and walk away. One night around 2 a.m, I woke up to the sound of the front door. I peeked out and saw her standing there in the dark with her face pressed against it, locking and unlocking it over and over, while quietly mumbling my name. Max Barker. Max Barker. Seeing her there, in the dark, whispering my name, was deeply unnerving. I quietly slipped back to my room and shut the door. Another evening, I was watching Gladiator when she turned on the lights, interrupting me, and suddenly started telling me about her ex-boyfriend. Within minutes, she was screaming at the top of her lungs, getting so riled up I thought the neighbors might call the police. Then she shouted something that froze me. "I'll slit his throat!" My mind immediately jumped to the possibility that she might not just be venting anger, but was actually capable of violence. When she calmed down, she thanked me for listening, giggled, and went back to her room. I retreated to mine, uneasy, and pushed my dresser against the door since there was no lock. That precaution might have saved me. In the middle of the night, I woke to the sound of my dresser scraping across the floor. She was trying to force her way into my room. I shouted for her to stop and turned on the light. Through the crack of the door, I saw her standing there, drunk, with a wild look in her eyes. I shoved the door shut, yelling for her to go to bed. Eventually, I heard her walk away, but I didn't sleep again. The next morning, my heart sank when I stepped into the hall and saw one of her steak knives lying on the floor outside my door. All I could think of was her screaming about slitting someone's throat. When I confronted her, she claimed she didn't remember trying to open my door or even telling me about her ex. That was the final straw. Since my lease was month to month, I quickly found a new place and moved out. About a month later, she tried contacting me again. While I was at the movies, she sent me over 40 text messages in 2 hours, ranging from "Hi, how are you?" to "I hate you." I never responded, and I never heard from her again. But to this day, I wonder, if I hadn't pushed my dresser in front of the door, would she have slipped inside my room and ended my life as I slept? The thought still gives me chills. Storyten. Many years ago, before I had kids, pets, a mortgage, or a husband, I worked as a travel writer in Europe. I often traveled alone, and this story comes from my very first visit to Prague. The trip was completely unplanned. My travel partner had abandoned me in another country, so I decided to make the most of it by heading somewhere new. When I arrived at the train station, I asked at the accommodation desk for a hostel near the city center. In my early 20s, winging it felt adventurous. These days, I'd be far less daring. The hostel I was sent to was an enormous, crumbling Art Deco building on a nondescript street about a 10-minute walk from Old Town. It might have once been beautiful, but by the time I arrived, it was filled with shabby furniture, stained carpet, and broken light fixtures. The air smelled of dust and standing water. I checked into a double room for $12 a night and noticed right away that I had a roommate. She wasn't there, but her side of the room was clearly lived in. A suitcase, a neatly folded dress over the chair, makeup scattered on the desk, and a stack of German fashion magazines on the bed. With no fixed plans, I spent the afternoon wandering through Old Town Square, the Jewish Quarter, and Wenceslas Square. I bought crystal for my mom and painted eggs for myself, and even booked a sunset dinner cruise for one. When I returned to the hostel to change, there was still no sign of my roommate. After the cruise and a glass of wine at a bar, I headed back around midnight, surprised to see her side of the room unchanged. Backpackers often disappear for a night, so I thought little of it. But when I showered before bed, I noticed subtle changes. Her bed was turned down, the magazines had been moved to the nightstand, and her dress was gone. Stranger still, a silky pink nightgown was now spread across my bed. Confused, I moved it to her side, assuming she'd return any moment. I sat journaling for nearly an hour, but the room stayed empty. When I left to use the bathroom one last time, the hostel felt unnervingly quiet. No voices, no music, no footsteps, just silence. The hallway lights flickered as I hurried back, my stomach tightening with unease. When I opened my door, the nightgown was once again lying across my bed. Sleep was restless. I kept the lamp on, but the shadows it cast made me uneasy. Sometime in the night, I was jolted awake by the sound of the door opening. A man stood silhouetted in the doorway, the hallway light behind him. His face was twisted, and he sobbed, "I didn't mean to. You have to help me." Too disoriented to feel fear, I reached for the lamp. When the light filled the room, the doorway was empty. The door was locked. No one could have entered. I spent the rest of the night fully dressed, sitting upright with the lamp on. At 7 o'clock, I packed my things and went to check out, even though I had paid for two more nights. At the desk, I casually mentioned that my roommate had never returned, and that I was a little concerned. The receptionist frowned at the key, checked her computer, then looked back at me. "What room did you say you were in?" I told her. Her expression tightened. "Ma'am, that room has been empty for 3 weeks. It was cleaned after the last guest. We only have 6 people in the building right now." The hostel was later renovated into a luxury hotel, but I'll never forget that night in Prague, or the eerie feeling that I had shared my room with someone who wasn't really there. Story 11. A few years ago, when I was 21 and still fairly naive, I decided to solo travel in South Korea after finishing a semester abroad in Japan. My friends had already flown home, so I figured I'd explore Seoul for a few days on my own before heading back. I booked a hostel in Gangnam, which was considered a safe neighborhood and had good reviews. But I made one big mistake. I booked a mixed dorm. I assumed mixed meant a general mix of people, but when I arrived, it turned out I was the only woman sharing a room with 5 men. At first, I told myself it was fine. Hostels are usually filled with chill travelers, and for the most part, that was true. I even went out to dinner with 2 of the guys who were genuinely nice, but one of them gave me strange vibes right from the start. He didn't do anything overtly threatening at first, but there was something about his presence that unsettled me. I brushed it off as maybe him just being shy or socially awkward, and I tried not to judge too quickly. Still, I kept my distance. but red flags started stacking up. Every morning, when I sat at the little vanity table to do my makeup, he would stand directly behind me, watching me through the mirror. He wouldn't say a word. When I asked if he needed something, he'd reply no, but continue staring until I became visibly uncomfortable. He also kept asking when I planned to shower, even though the bathrooms were separate stalls for everyone. There was absolutely no reason for him to know my schedule, and it creeped me out. He constantly wanted to hang out, and though I always politely declined, he kept pushing. The turning point came when I randomly bumped into him at a subway station far from the hostel, right after I visited Daeoksugung Palace. Seoul is huge, so running into him there felt off. He acted like it was a coincidence, but I couldn't shake the feeling that he'd followed me. Still, I told myself maybe I was overthinking it, and I tried not to cause drama. But my last morning there erased any doubts. I woke up early, drifted back to sleep, and when I opened my eyes again, he was sitting right beside my bed, leaning over me, stroking my face and shoulder. My stomach dropped. I sat up instantly and demanded, "What the hell are you doing?" He mumbled something vague, no real answer, like it was nothing unusual. I felt sick. I immediately started packing, telling him I was checking out. He followed me around the room, trying to chat casually, acting as if nothing strange had happened. I finally snapped and told him to stop, reminding him that his flight wasn't even until later. That's when he looked at me and said, "I really like you." I told him it was inappropriate. We'd only known each other for 5 days. His reply, "Sometimes you just know." He then asked for my number, pushing harder when I refused. Feeling cornered, I finally gave it to him just to make him stop, planning to block him afterward. Nothing technically happened, but the whole ordeal left me shaken and furious with myself. I felt disgusting, and I hated how long I stayed polite. At the same time, I kept thinking that if I'd been harsher, maybe it would have provoked something worse. He felt unpredictable. That was the first and last time I ever booked a mixed dorm. Since then, I only stay in female-only rooms, and thankfully, I've never had an experience like that again. Story 12. A few years ago, when I was 23 and just starting graduate school, I was new to the area and desperately searching for a cheap apartment that would fit my stipend budget. I wasn't picky, but I was naive, and I made the mistake of including Craigslist postings in my search. One ad in particular stood out. A one-bedroom condo on the water with a fireplace, dock access for kayaks, and two spacious floors with an updated look. All for just $500 a month, most utilities included. It seemed way too good to be true. The ad specifically said seeking women tenants only. When I went to see the place, thankfully I brought my boyfriend with me. At the door, we were greeted by a middle-aged man, maybe 55, wearing a stained tank top and boxers, standing far too close for comfort. The second I saw him, I got a knot in my stomach. He seemed annoyed that my boyfriend was there, and immediately mentioned that he usually just rents to women. At first, I assumed he was simply the landlord looking to lease the unit, but then he revealed that it wasn't a one-bedroom at all. It was actually a two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment, and he was looking for a roommate. He even tried to get me to come inside alone while my boyfriend waited outside. I refused, insisting he come with me. The tour itself was unnerving. The apartment was strangely dark and almost empty. Even though he supposedly lived there, he seemed unprepared, fumbling through explanations of each room, pausing to think whenever I asked about utilities or lease details, as if he hadn't considered them before. The entire time he stood uncomfortably close, to the point where my boyfriend finally had to ask him to give me some space. When he showed me the room that would supposedly be mine, it was filthy. The paint on the walls was peeling, and there was a mattress covered in dark, disturbing stains. It was jarring because the rest of the apartment looked decently kept, which made that room stand out in a way that felt intentional. But the worst part? He refused to let me see the bathroom. He brushed it off, saying there had been damage from a previous tenant that he still needed to fix. To this day, I wonder what was really in there. I couldn't get out of that apartment fast enough. As soon as we got back to the car, I turned to my boyfriend and said I had no doubt things would have gone very differently if I'd shown up alone. Looking back, it feels obvious what he was really trying to do. So to the creepy Craigslist landlord, let's never meet again. Story 13. I've debated sharing this for years because I know the trust between a tenant and their landlord or maintenance staff is supposed to be sacred. But this isn't a story about a bad neighbor. It's about what I experienced as a renter and how that trust was completely broken. Even before graduating high school, I dreamed of living at a place called Paradise Apartments. They advertised endless amenities I knew I'd probably never use, but the complex was pet-friendly and within my tiny budget, so I was set on it. When the time came, I sublet the only available unit and moved in. The apartment was smaller and shabbier than I'd imagined. Thin walls, old plumbing disguised by remodeling, and the neighborhood was less safe than I expected. Still, it was mine. I was primarily an online student, but I had one early morning class twice a week. Those were the only times I left home during the day. I had two kittens at the time, so when things went missing or were out of place, I blamed them. But there was one thing I couldn't explain. Mornings when I had class, I'd often return to find my box of underwear pulled out from my IKEA shelving unit and sitting in the middle of the bedroom floor. I told myself I must have been scatterbrained, rushing in the mornings. Sometimes it even felt like clothes disappeared after laundry day, but I convinced myself I was imagining it. One night, my boyfriend asked me to unlock his apartment since his roommate had locked him out. I left quickly, making a mental note that every single light in my own apartment was on. I normally avoided wasting electricity, but I knew I'd only be gone 10 minutes. When I returned, my stomach sank. The lights were all off, every switch. Even my reptile's basking lamp, which was on a timer, and my laptop, which I had left open mid-assignment, was now powered off and closed. My boyfriend came over and searched the place. No forced entry, no intruder, just an apartment systematically shut down. I called emergency maintenance. The manager dismissed my concerns, suggesting maybe I'd forgotten to turn the lights off, or that a friend with a spare key was pranking me. The only people with keys were my boyfriend, whose keys were locked inside his own apartment, and my mom, who lived 3 hours away. Neither of them would have done this. I demanded new locks, and they reluctantly agreed, though I didn't feel reassured. There were two maintenance men on staff, one older, kind but bumbling, and a younger, scruffy guy who made me uneasy. I couldn't shake the feeling it was him. When I'd first moved in, management promised me a new countertop within 3 days. Months later, out of the blue, the scruffy maintenance guy let himself in without notice to install it. It took him 2 days to replace one small section. Another time, when I was fresh out of the shower, he knocked once and immediately started unlocking my door before I could get dressed. I had to slam it shut to stop him. He claimed he hadn't heard me call out, but I didn't believe him. Later, I found a note he'd left after another unannounced entry, mentioning that he'd been careful not to let my cats out, and adding that my third cat was cute. I only had two cats. The third was a photo of my childhood pet, displayed in my bedroom on the same shelf where my underwear was kept. That detail confirmed my worst fear. He had been inside my bedroom. I went to the office, demanding they leave notes in my file that I required 24 hours notice and wanted to be present for any entry. After that, the surprise visit stopped, but that's when I noticed things moving around. He lived on site, so he knew my schedule. Who knew how many times he had come in while I was gone, or worse, while I was asleep? I bought my own lock and started saving for something safer. With help from my parents, I purchased a condo and subleased my apartment. In my final days there, my mom came to help me pack. While I was at class, she caught the scruffy maintenance man trying his key in my lock. When she confronted him, he claimed he was there to paint the front door with no supplies in hand. She told him he could wait until after I moved out. Years later, while working at another complex, I gave a tour to a man I quickly pegged as a shopper from another property. Sure enough, he revealed he was the owner of Paradise Apartments. He asked my opinion of his community, and I told him honestly that I was probably the only person to leave them a negative review. I explained briefly that my apartment had been broken into, and I suspected staff. He pressed for details, then called the manager on speakerphone. The manager admitted that back when I lived there, they had fired a young, scruffy maintenance worker, caught multiple times breaking into apartments of single women. The owner looked proud, as though that solved everything, and asked if I'd change my review. I told him no. During my time working in property management, I learned just how sloppy many complexes were with security. Keys handed out freely, background checks skipped for employees, locks sometimes not change at all if the previous tenant was good. My own experiences taught me the importance of strict rules for lock changes, key tracking, notices, and thorough background checks. Now, thanks to laws like Mia's Law in Florida, stricter standards are enforced. But even so, if you're renting, stay vigilant. If you notice things out of place, if you suspect someone's been in your apartment, document it, tell staff, tell police, tell your family, because you never really know who might have a key to your home. Story 14. It happened 2 years ago, during a time when I had dropped out of school and was spending nearly every day at home. I struggled with depression and social anxiety, and since both of my parents worked, I was usually alone in the house for long stretches of time. One afternoon, I was in my room watching Netflix and snacking when the intercom rang. Because of my anxiety, I never answered when I was home alone, so I ignored it, even as the ringing persisted. A few seconds later, I heard noises in the hallway of my building. Living on the ground floor meant I could hear everything, so I assumed it was just the neighbors. But then came the sound of violent knocking and ringing at my door. My heart started racing. I grabbed a kitchen knife and stood frozen, terrified this person might actually try to break in. Suddenly, there was silence. I thought it was over, until a minute later when I heard banging at the kitchen window. Whoever it was hit it so hard that the latch popped open. Hiding in the hallway, clutching the knife, I watched as the window opened and a man calmly poked his head inside to look around. His face made my blood run cold. He looked utterly relaxed, disturbingly calm, as though breaking into a stranger's home was routine. He scanned the kitchen, then quietly left. Shaking, I called my aunt to come pick me up. I couldn't bear to stay alone in the house. I waited anxiously, knife still in hand, until she arrived. After that day, I never saw the man again. At least that's what I thought. Yesterday, my dad told me something he had kept from me for 2 years, not wanting to make my anxiety worse. He said that two sisters in our neighborhood had spotted a man hanging around our residence around that same time. He lingered near my bedroom window, which faces the parking lot, hiding behind cars and staring directly inside. I had no idea. One of the sisters eventually took a photo of him, and once he realized he'd been noticed, he disappeared. She showed the photo to my dad, who started keeping an eye out, but the man never returned. Looking back, I can't help but piece it together. His first move was knocking and ringing at my door, probably to see if anyone was home. When that didn't work, he started stalking me, lurking by my window. If the sisters hadn't spotted him and taken that photo, maybe he would have kept coming back. Maybe he would have tried again. The questions still haunt me. What were his real intentions? Was I his target all along? And worst of all, what would have happened if no one had seen him? I'll never have the answers, but I still shiver every time I think about that calm, expressionless face peering into my kitchen. Story 15. When I was younger, my family lived in a three-story house with my parents, my younger sibling, and our dog. We had moved in just a few months before my sibling was born, and that's when we first met the neighbors across the street. Their oldest child, Lucas, was always strange, but not the harmless kind of strange. There was something darker about him, something that made you uneasy the more you got to know him. And over the years, I became almost certain that he had been inside our house in the middle of the night. Our house was built on a hill, so from the front it looked like two stories, but the basement connected directly to the backyard. The yards in that neighborhood were wide and open, giving anyone plenty of space to sneak around unnoticed. Unfortunately, my family had a bad habit of forgetting to lock the basement doors. My sibling and I often went in and out while playing outside, or someone would let the dog out, and we'd forget to bolt the door behind us. Still, we always locked the door from the basement to the main floor before bed, so we thought we were safe. I stayed up late back then, usually until 3 or 4 in the morning. That's when the first unsettling incident happened. I was upstairs in my room when I heard my dog growling angrily from downstairs. I figured he had spotted a cat in the yard, something that happened every now and then. So I rushed down to stop him from barking and waking the house. But instead of finding him by the front window, I found him stiff and bristling at the locked door to the basement. His fur was standing on end, his nose pressed to the crack at the bottom. That's when it hit me. Someone was on the other side of that door. I froze, my heart pounding, then crept back upstairs as quietly as I could and woke my parents. My dad brushed it off, saying the dog must have heard something outside, Still, he went downstairs to check and admitted afterward that one of the basement doors had been left unlocked that night. The second incident was even worse. I was up late again when a sudden, sharp bark from my dog rang through the house like a gunshot. I jumped out of my chair and rushed to the window, expecting to see a cat in the yard. Instead, I saw Lucas sprinting out of our front yard in the dark, disappearing back across the street into his own house. My stomach dropped. Why would he be in our yard in the middle of the night? The next morning, I told my mom, and she promised she'd bring it up with his mother, but nothing ever came of it. Between these incidents and other unsettling things about that family that I won't go into here, I'm almost certain Lucas had been in our house before, slipping in through those forgotten basement doors. It's been years since then. My family doesn't live there anymore, and as far as I know, those neighbors are doing fine. But looking back now, with some distance, I realize just how deeply disturbing it all was. The thought that someone I knew, someone right across the street, might have crept into our home at night still makes my skin crawl. Story 16. I started a new job a few months ago, and at first everything seemed fine. Then one coworker, who I'll call Twinkle Toes, because he always walks on his toes, came back to the office after working remotely for the first few months I was there. From the moment I noticed him, something about his behavior set off alarm bells. He began walking past my desk twice a day, even though his own workspace was nowhere near mine. Each time he would stare at me, long, silent stares that reminded me of Hannibal Lecter. Sometimes he'd make random comments like, "Burning the midnight oil, huh?" But the way he looked at me was far more unsettling than what he said. For weeks, I didn't even know his name. I only learned it later from someone else. The first time he actually approached was when my coworker, Amber, was sitting with me. He walked over to her side of the desk, joined our conversation, but kept his eyes fixed entirely on me. Even when Amber spoke directly to him, he answered without looking away from me. Later, when I made it clear I was married, telling Amber I was heading home to make soup for my sick husband, she texted me that Twinkle Toes had immediately asked if I was single. She also mentioned he had never spoken to her in the 2 years they had worked together. After that, his behavior escalated. He continued passing by, staring, and one evening when I left work later than usual, I found him standing silently in the middle of the hallway, blocking my path. I greeted him and waved, but he didn't move or respond. I ended up retreating into the back offices and waiting before sneaking out through another exit, taking the long way to my car while constantly checking over my shoulder. Another day, I was temporarily stationed in a completely different area of the building. Sure enough, Twinkle Toes came there too, talking to the employees at that desk while never breaking eye contact with me. My coworkers later told me he had never visited their area before. They were convinced he had come there just to watch me. That's when I completely freaked out and went to my supervisor. She admitted he had a history of fixating on women and taking things too far socially, but claimed he'd never harmed anyone. Still, the pattern was obvious. He even mentioned to others that he wanted to start taking walks around the property during the same time I usually took my lunch break. One coworker warned me, "If you see him outside, don't let him catch up to you." I asked my manager for help, and they agreed to have security escort me to my car if necessary. They also said they would speak with him directly about his behavior. My husband supported my decision, encouraging me to stay cautious. My coworkers were divided. Some thought I should keep being nice to him to prevent things from escalating, while others agreed I needed to stay firm and assertive. The staring, the following, the refusal to respond when I tried to talk, it all made me feel like he was unpredictable, even dangerous. Part of me wondered if he was just awkward and didn't know how to act, but his silence and intense gaze felt sinister. Update. After I spoke to management again, things changed. Twinkle Toes stopped visiting my desk, stopped showing up in places where I was working, and stopped the relentless staring. I later learned that he's on the spectrum, and the company is working with him on behavior issues. Knowing this gave me more perspective. I don't think I overreacted, because I had no idea at the time, but now I feel like he wasn't malicious, just socially unaware and fixated in an unhealthy way. Still, I've taken the advice to stay more assertive and distant. If he passes by, I no longer wave or say hello, and that seems to keep boundaries clear. I can admit now that he's probably not a bad person at heart, but the way he fixated on me was disturbing, and I'm glad it's finally stopped. Story 17. Every summer while I was at university, I did temp work for the company where my dad was head of a department. It was mostly data entry for exam remarks, nothing glamorous, but it paid and kept me busy. Everyone there knew me as the boss's daughter, and since I came back year after year, I was a familiar face. I was about 22 when this happened, the second to last summer I worked there. I had just cut my hair short and dyed it red when a guy I'd never really spoken to before approached me in the foyer where I usually waited for my dad after my shift. Let's call him Leon. He worked in my dad's department and had a bit of a reputation. Young, decent looking, and apparently a crush object for some of the women. I was dating someone at the time, so I didn't think much of him. But what happened next made my skin crawl. He started describing every hairstyle I'd had over the last 2 years. Brown with no fringe, curled phase, fringe with red dye, then purple, and now short red again. This man I just met was tracking my appearance over years and saying it out loud as if it were normal. Then he asked to add me on Facebook and insisted on standing there while I pulled out my phone and accepted his request in front of him. From there, it only got stranger. He kept asking me if I had MSN, repeating the question over and over like it was urgent, then begging me to make an account so we could chat. When I told him I only used my dad's Skype to talk to my boyfriend who lived abroad, he immediately pushed, "Can you please just get your own Skype so we can video chat after work?" His intensity was suffocating. Thankfully, another coworker called him back to his desk before I had to give an answer. That evening, I got a Facebook message from him. "We like the same movies." That was it. Something about its simplicity unnerved me so much that I logged off without replying. The next day, he stormed up to me in the foyer, demanding to know why I hadn't responded, then launched into a rapid-fire list of movies from my profile, naming them one by one before saying, "It's okay. I forgive you." And then he walked away. From then on, he found me every day, talking at me nonstop until my dad arrived. I tried everything, even pretending to pick my nose, to put him off, but he was relentless. Eventually, I started hiding in the toilets, then later in my dad's car just to avoid him. But one day he even came outside, scanning cars until he found me, and tapped on the window to ask why I wasn't in my usual spot. It felt like he was keeping tabs on me. I finally told my dad, who gave him a talking to, and after that, Leon kept his distance. But the whole situation left me shaken. When I left that summer, I assumed I'd never see him again. But years later, just before I moved to China for a teaching job, Leon...
Big news! Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end-of-season savings. And it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Suddenly reappeared, hired as a temp in the same office. He recognized me instantly, struck up conversation, and then, as I was leaving on my last day, he called after me, "See you in China." I spent my first 2 weeks abroad looking over my shoulder, half expecting him to appear. He never did, thankfully. But that phrase, "See you in China," still echoes in my mind as one of the creepiest, most unsettling moments of my life. Story 18. Back in mid to late 2018, I was working at a grocery store in the deli and bakery section. Around that time, I had just come out of a 2-year relationship, and the breakup hit me hard. I wasn't myself. I was quiet, withdrawn, and honestly vulnerable. That's when we hired a new employee, who I'll call John. On his first day, I helped train him. He seemed nice enough at first and picked things up quickly. A few shifts later, he overheard a conversation between me and my close coworker Jane, where she was checking in on me after the breakup. Later that day, he came up during my break to say he was sorry I was going through a rough time. I thought he was just being kind, so I thanked him. Looking back, I realized that was the start of something I should never have entertained. One rainy November evening, I offered him a ride home since he lived nearby and didn't have a car. That small gesture opened a door I should have kept firmly shut. After that, things got disturbing. John began making school jokes, brushing up against me and accidentally pressing himself against me when he walked by. He even started doing this in front of customers. Then he somehow got my number from our boss, claiming he needed it for shift coverage, and started bombarding me with texts. He told me he loved me, that he would treat me better than my ex, and constantly pressured me to respond. Whenever our third coworker went on break, John would take the chance to harass me more aggressively. I was terrified to speak up back then. I didn't have the confidence to defend myself. Eventually, I couldn't take it anymore and put in my 2 weeks. Before I left, I finally snapped and sent him a text telling him he was gross, to lose my number, and never talk to me again. He responded by apologizing and asking me to come over to talk face to face. Against my better judgment and ignoring my friend Eve's very firm warnings, I agreed, though I told him I'd be bringing Eve with me. When we pulled into his driveway, he didn't come out. Instead, he texted me to come back and talk in his car. Against my instincts, I turned around. The moment I pulled back in, I got the worst gut feeling of my life. Before I could leave, his dad and two of his brothers jumped out of another car and surrounded mine. They pounded on my windows, tried to force my doors open, and blocked me in so I couldn't reverse. Adrenaline kicked in. I floored it out of the driveway, barely squeezing past them without hitting anyone. Eve and I thought we were safe when we pulled into my work's parking lot to calm down. But seconds later, they followed us there and tried to box us in again. I somehow managed to escape, and we called the police. An officer met us at a nearby gas station, and I filed a report. But to my disbelief, they told me there was nothing they could do since no crime had technically been committed unless he acted on his threats. I reported it to my manager, but they claimed it wasn't their responsibility since it happened off company property. I left the job before my 2 weeks were up. For months after, John continued to harass me anonymously. I'd get calls from unknown numbers threatening to kill me, saying they had guns and would shoot out my tires. Whenever I visited the area, he somehow found me and followed me until I hit the highway. The police never stepped in. Their stance was the same. Until he physically attacked me, they couldn't help. It's been nearly 2 years now since I last saw him, and I haven't heard a word. I know none of it was my fault, being harassed, stalked, and threatened. But I can admit I was too trusting at first. I should have listened to Eve from the very beginning. Thankfully, I got out unharmed, and I can only hope it stays that way.